What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It is an interesting question. Would the Prophet Muhammad, had he had the opportunity to do so, encountering and conquering, perhaps, Constantinople, faced there with this mammoth, an ancient church, already ancient at his time, would he have converted that cathedral, the Hagia Sophia, into a mosque? Well, there is a New York Times opinion column that says, no, he wouldn't have. He would have tolerated Christians worshiping there. He wouldn't have, as later Muslims did, convert churches into mosques. Joining us to answer that question, Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College and author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam, and The Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
What is your answer to that question? Would Muhammad have converted the Hagia Sophia into a mosque?
He would have just taken it over, as, for example, Mehmed II did when he conquered Constantinople in 1453 and made it into a mosque. Muhammad would have done the very same thing. And as a result, not only would he have done that, as, for example, Mehmed did after conquering Constantinople and obviously Hagia Sophia, got rid of all the Christian symbols. Don't forget, Muhammad despised the Christian cross. He just hated that symbol. So any Christian cross, and there aren't too many Christian churches, particularly in that era of time, that didn't have a cross. So he would not only have converted into a Muslim, but he would have destroyed the crosses and any other kind of symbol that would have conveyed Christian symbolism.
Why historically did Muslim conquerors turn Christian churches and shrines and holy sites into mosques?
Well, you know, it's interesting that Constantinople, as we know, was the pearl of Christianity in terms of, you know, Constantine made it into his city back in 330. And immediately the same year, he constructed the first church that resulted finally later on in the third effort of Hagia Sophia. And by the way, I might mention, Hagia Sophia, very often, most commonly, it is never mentioned why it has that name. We basically translated Hagia in Greek means holy or sacred or saint, and Sophia means wisdom. And so basically it was named Hagia Sophia, not in an abstract sense of sacred wisdom, but reflecting what Jesus Christ was. Namely, he was holy, divine, or sacred wisdom, embodied as he was being both God and man. That's why it got the name that it has. That's basically lost. Most people tend to think it's just, well, holy wisdom, wisdom is great, and whatnot. But no, there's much more. It's really a reflection of Jesus Christ. There are basically two reasons. Number one, it was the cheap way of having a mosque. You didn't have to engage in all the expensive building structures and the time that it took to build a building. That was one reason. And the other one was because they wanted to conquer, and they did conquer, Christianity, which, of course, the Quran is very, very clear that Christianity is a despised religion in the Quran. Just to cite a few passages, for example, the Quran speaking in behalf of God, saying, O prophet, fight against the disbelievers and the hypocrites, and be harsh upon them, and their refuge is hell, and wretched is their destination. Again, it says, for example, I will put terror in their hearts of the infidel. Strike off their heads. Strike off everyone. Do not make friends with Christians and Jews. And multiple passages like this are in the Quran. And as a result, that is another reason they conquered. And of course, it took them a number. Well, actually, Muslims already, the Turks back in the late 700s, tried to conquer Constantinople, which was heavily fortified, and 8 different times, and they always failed until 1453, when Mehmet, the leader of the Muslims, had obtained massive cannons and basically penetrated, broke down the walls, and permitted them finally to, actually it was a 5-6 week fight that took place, and then of course it crumbled, defeated, and the first thing they did was go to Hagia Sophia. Christians had gone into the building while they were praying and they were singing, and it was crowded with people, and when the Muslims finally broke into Constantinople, the first thing they did was go at Hagia Sophia. They broke down the steel doors and butchered women and children, and many of the capable young boys were sold into slavery. And then the other thing that Muhammad and Mehmed, basically the conqueror, had a imam go to the pulpit and declare it, namely to being Allah is great and the divine prophet is Muhammad. And that basically from there on in, it became a mosque, and they destroyed and the symbols, they camouflaged or plastered over all the beautiful gold mosaics that was on the wall. It was one of the most beautiful buildings built at that time. It was the first building that broke away from the architecture of the Gothic, and as a result of it, it was built in a short period of time, in basically 5.5 years, and this was the third construction. The first one began in 330, right at the time Constantinople was declared the city or the head of the Roman Empire, with Constantine the Great occupying it. And then a few years later, it was basically burned down, and then in 404, the second building was destroyed, and 415, the second was restored. And then again, they had what was called the Nika riots in Constantinople, and two groups fighting each other, and they basically destroyed the second building. And then, this is in the early 530s, then in 532, Emperor Justinian I had two groups, one from the north, one to the south, compete to build this building, and in 5.5 years it was finished. And when he was finished, Justinian didn't have a great deal of humility, said, Solomon, I have outperformed you. In other words, I have built a temple greater than what Solomon did in the days of the Old Testament. And that's how the building then for many years functioned. And it was built in form of a dome to basically resemble an imaginary symbolic site of heaven.
How would you describe the significance of Hagia Sophia in the ancient Christian world?
Well, it did an awful lot of things happen there, for example. Not only did it serve as the center, basically, of the Christian church in Constantinople, you had many of the, well, for example, the great schism that happened in 1054, you had the Pope sending a legate, an emissary, condemning the church for not having or adopted the filioque clause, namely, as you and I noted first, that the Holy Ghost proceeded from the Father and the Son. The Greek church never did accept that particular phrase, namely only argued that the Holy Ghost only came from God the Father, not Father and Son. And he's excommunicated the Eastern Church. And then you had for a number of years a massive debate and conflict happening, and many of those represented or met in the building of Hagia Sophia. And it, of course, was always seen as a symbol. In fact, one of the saddest things you can see, it was basically the symbol of Christianity for all those years. And when the Turks invaded it, or the Muslims invaded it, Christianity basically lost its glory, lost its fame, if you will, in terms of what it really had. And ever since then, after, for example, that particular destruction took place, didn't take long, the church next door, called the Church of the Holy Apostles, which was quite nearby it, which is where, for example, Constantine the Great is buried and about 30 other famous people. That, a few years later, after the Turks had captured Constantinople, they demolished that particular church, and to this day, what stands on it is a mosque, and below it are a lot of famous Christians, in fact, including Justinian I, who built the Hagia Sophia, is buried there together with his wife, going all the way back to Constantine the Great, and a number of other Roman dignitaries were buried in that particular church over which a mosque is now standing. So it's another example that they didn't, for example, like Christian churches, but where possible, they demolished them. Now, obviously, they didn't demolish Hagia Sophia because it was too much of a gem. And after having conquered Hagia Sophia, much of the architecture that the Muslims built was mimicked, if I may use that word, of what Hagia Sophia had. For example, one of the first major mosques that was built in Jerusalem, the Muslim Aqsa, A-Q-S-A, which stands there today right next to the Golden Dome, was very much a building, and it was built in 691, very much a building that reflected much of Hagia Sophia.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times opinion column titled, Would the Prophet Muhammad Convert the Hagia Sophia? We'll take up the argument that Muhammad saw Christians and Jews as allies. Is that true? Next. What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll close out Romans with final instructions and concluding doxology. Then we'll launch into St. Matthew with the book of the genealogy, from Abraham to Jesse, from David to the exile. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Your church's chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam, their glitter is shedding, and they're held together with toothpicks. Now is the perfect time to replace them with AdChristmas Christmas in July sale. Participating artists have discounted their products, so stock up on jewelry, crucifixes, art, church banners, music, greeting cards, and more. Discounts range from 10 to 50% off. Visit us at adcrucem.com to take advantage of the sale. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship. We're discussing a New York Times opinion column titled, Would the Prophet Muhammad Convert the Hagia Sophia? With Dr. Alvin Schmidt. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues, Etc. The 2020 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference sold out more than 3 months in advance with an attendance limit of 500. But since the global pandemic forced this year's conference to go to a virtual format, we no longer have an attendance limit. And today we surpassed the 600 mark in paid registrants. It's not too late for you to register as well. You can watch presentations by Matt Walsh, Mark and Molly Hemingway, Chris Roseborough, Greg Kokel, Katie Faust, and Hans Feeney. The 2020 virtual Making the Case Conference is this Friday, July the 24th, and Saturday, July the 25th. The $135 registration fee offers both live and on-demand viewing. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Dr. Schmidt, the New York Times piece claims that Muhammad saw Christians and Jews as allies. Is this true?
Very, very untrue. For example, the moment they had conquered Jerusalem in 637-38, they prevented the Christians from building any new churches. That's one example to show that it is not true. But there's even more to it than that. If one takes, for example, the almost 800 years of occupation that the Muslims had of the Iberian Peninsula, mostly Spain and a little bit of Portugal, they had instituted a Muslim policy, an institution really, called the dhimmitude, where, for example, those who were not Muslims had to follow certain rules and if not severely punished and penalized, and I might just mention a few of those. They were not able or permitted to build any new places of worship. They were not, for example, able to repair even old places of worship that had been damaged and destroyed by Muslims. They were not to prevent Muslims traveling from staying in places of their building, like churches that they wanted to occupy. They were to entertain for 3 days any Muslim who wanted to stay in their homes, and they couldn't say, no, it's my private property. They had to house them. They were not to harbor or any hostility or give aid or comfort to hostile elements. They were to show respect for every Muslim. When they met a Muslim on the street, they had to pass, step aside and not occupy the street at the same time and just more or less walk closely past each other. They were not to allow to have private meetings in their homes. They were not to dress like Muslims so that you could tell the difference that they were not obviously Muslims. They were to name themselves with no Muslim names. That was totally forbidden. They were not to ride on horses with saddles and a bridle. They were not to possess any arms. They were not to wear signet rings or seals on their fingers. They were not to sell or drink liquor openly, and they were to wear distinctive dress, showing inferior status. Even in some places back in the Iraq, in the what's today Iraq, they had to wear a yellow patch, which, for example, gave Hitler the idea to have Jews wear something similar in the Nazi era of the 1930s. So again, there were at least 20, I read about 15 different examples of how Christians were treated as second-class citizens at best and not seen as equals together with Muslims. And that's the history. That was going on in Spain for almost 800 years until Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand expelled them in 1492.
Was there ever a time, as claimed in the New York Times piece, that early Muslims left Christian churches untouched?
No, it isn't, because the earliest thing we can see, for example, is in Saudi Arabia, basically, where the Muslims got their start with Muhammad. The author in this article makes mention, for example, that they were a group of Christians in about 617, sought refuge in Ethiopia, at that time it was called Abyssinia, which is true. See, Muhammad became a prophet around 610, between 610 and 613, 614, when he began to preach to get people to join his religion. And he was not very successful. In fact, the Quraysh people, tribe from which he himself was descended in the area of Mecca, despised his new religion that he was preaching. And so they expelled him and his followers, and they went to Ethiopia. And there for a few years, although Muhammad had heard that there was a softening of the attitude against him, so he went back from Ethiopia to Mecca. And when he got to Mecca, they found out that he had not, as the rumor had been, that he had accepted pagan gods, particularly three female gods that were mentioned. When he came back, he did not accept them. Well, now then they began to persecute him. And this is why then in 622, he and a few friends of his escaped in secret at night, hid in caves, to go to Medina farther north. And this is often called the first Hijra, the first flight. And when he got to Medina, he now changed postures. He said, I am the last of the prophets and I am sent with a sword. And so from then on in, he used the sword to advance the case of Islam. And this is why he died in 632. Only 5 years later, and even before that already, his second successor by the name of Omar invaded, for example, Palestine and captured Jerusalem, as we said a little while ago, in 637. And from there on, they went to capture all the way the northern shores of Africa, all the way, for example, to just to the south of the Rock of Gibraltar. So they were basically expanding. Ever since he died in 632, his successors engaged in war, and the sword became the symbol. A curved sword became a symbol, which imitates, by the way, also the Muslim crescent. The curve of the sword is basically an imitation of the crescent and has become a warlike religious symbol of Islam to this day. And so basically, Muhammad, after he came to Medina, he changed the whole posture of Islam. And this is why the passages in the Quran do not allow for any kind of toleration of Christians to be on the same level or on the same par. And even to this day, you see, for example, Muslims do not permit in Muslim countries for Christians to flourish. In fact, what happens, they get persecuted.
So the op-ed piece also says that Islam only began converting churches into mosques after Islam became an empire and expanded as an empire. Is that true?
Well, again, it's not true. You see, this particular article is a politically correct kind of article, if you will, but it's flawed with error. For example, when he talks about Muslims, the greatness of the Ottomans lies in their pluralism, rooted in the very heart of Islam. Where in heaven's name is there pluralism that is advocated in the Quran or in the Hadith or in the Sharia? It just isn't there. The Sharia, I have the volume, it's about 800 pages of all kinds of laws that are frightening to read, for example, relative to what Muslims ought to do. And you also have, for example, the Hadith, which are the sayings that basically reflect the Muhammad's beliefs. And I might mention a couple of examples from that. Whoever changes his Islamic religion, kill him. Hadith chapter 9, verse 57. And I might also add that the Muslim, as I said, the Muslim scimitar, the sword, is, again, to repeat, a symbol of Muslim violence, or that they need to conquer all those who are not Muslims. And this, of course, is today hidden, and the author of this particular article obviously is not being honest. I can't say, and I doubt very much, that he doesn't know the history, but again, it's to make Islam look attractive. In fact, as I read this particular piece of his and published in the New York Times, excellent example of fake news today. This is another fake article. If you know anything about Muslims, pluralism is an absolute taboo. Where they are, for example, this is another reason they are moving to make the Hagia Sophia a mosque, to have it be as a museum, which it has been since 1934, is not satisfying Muslim theological goals, if I will. And it became a museum in 1934 when Kemal Atatürk, who took over the leadership of Turkey in 1923, then by 1934, he converted the Hagia Sophia into a museum. Now all of that is being erased because, again, Islam, having Turkey having with Erdogan a rather conservative Muslim, wants to go backtrack and do what Mehmed did, for example, when he first captured Constantinople in 1453.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. He's author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. We're responding to a New York Times opinion column titled, Would the Prophet Muhammad Convert the Hagia Sophia? Stay tuned. You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Matt Walsh, Chris Rosebrough, Greg Kokel, Hans Feeney, and Katie Faust at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes both live and on-demand viewing. For more information and to register, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors. Coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West, about a New York Times opinion column titled, Would the Prophet Muhammad Convert the Hagia Sophia? Dr. Schmidt, you began to tell us before the break, and if you would tell us in a little more detail, how did the Hagia Sophia, after being a church and then converted into a mosque for many, many years, how did it become a museum?
Well, Kemal Ataturk, who took over as leader of Turkey in 1923, was seen as an atheist by the Muslims. And he, for example, he probably was an atheist, maybe even otherwise. And he tried to take away the religious aspect that the Muslims had put into Hagia Sophia ever since it was captured back in 1453. Well, you know, he was also the individual who introduced the Latin script in Turkey. If you go to the Near East, for example, and you go to Turkey, you see Latin script, not Arabic writings on signs and road and books and whatnot all. He wanted to westernize Turkey in relationship to Europe as a whole, even though, for example, Turkey essentially is an Asia Minor. And so he basically tried to make Turkey a secular society, secular in terms of Muslim religious control. And therefore, Muslims were not supposed to use it, and he made many different ways to make it life difficult for the Muslims, even though he was born and raised as a Muslim, but he really was not a Muslim. He also had, for example, ordered, interestingly, men to wear brimmed hats. Why brimmed hats? Well, it was one way of him preventing them from bowing down with the face on the floor. The brimmed hat would not permit that to happen. So he tried all kinds of ways to secularize the society of Turkey. And of course, because Hagia Sophia was such an important symbol, such a large building, he focused on that. And so that's how he secularized it. And then ever since 1934, 5,000 to 6,000 people visited each and every year since his having converted it to a Muslim, which is now being undone and making it back into a mosque. What all will happen, we don't know. Already many of the beautiful gold mosaics had been plastered over by the Muslims ever since they took whole order of it. And the mosques, symbols, for example, have been occupying it. So now all of this is going to become a mosque, and how it will look. Interestingly, the article mentions also that the writer would advocate or would like to see both it being used by Christians and Muslims for worship purposes. He fails to ignore that the Christians would, if they were to be permitted to use it as a worship place, they would have to get rid of any form of cross or a distinctive Christian symbol. And that's hard to imagine that that could be a reality, that Christians would be serious about it, unless they would be sort of Christians who would compromise and be basically only doing it as nominal Christians rather than Christians with a strong conviction. And so I myself have been a couple of times to Hagia Sophia to see the building. It's a majestic thing to see. And I might also mention it's interesting, and I don't know the reason. Right next door, only a couple of minutes walk, is another Christian famous church building, Santa Iria, or Saint Irene, back from the Greek word meaning, or sometimes called Irene of Peace, for example. That building is considerably smaller, but is largely left intact and is not being used for anything that I know of today. And why the Muslims haven't been using that, to my knowledge, I do not know. But so you had the Irene, the building of Irene there, the Cathedral of Irene, and you had the Sophia, and then right next, a little farther down in the city of the center of the square, had the Church of the Holy Apostles that I alluded to earlier. So you had three major Christian buildings there. And of course now, what will happen to Irene, I don't know whether the Muslims are going to do anything with it. For some reason or another, it's not a very large building. Maybe that's why they have never used it, although I've never seen any discussion on it. But nevertheless, Hagia Sophia will become a mosque.
Why is the conversion of the Hagia Sophia from a museum back into a mosque significant today, Dr. Shah?
Well, I think basically it's another example that conforms to Islam ideology, namely to conquer the non-existent Islamic world. You know, the Muslims have basically two symbolic statements. It's what we call religion of war and a religion of peace. And the religion of peace is Islam. And all non-Muslims are the religion of war. And they have to be conquered. And one way to conquer them, of course, is not only with the sword, but to take over. For example, not only did the Muslims occupy Spain for 800 years, but let me also give you an example of what they did to the rest of the world. They occupied Greece for 500 years, Bulgaria for 500 years, Romania for 400 years, Serbia for 400 years, Sicily for 300 years, Hungary for 150 years. In addition, the Muslims fought in Austria and Italy and Malta and Cyprus and Armenia and Poland and Georgia and the Ukraine and parts of Russia. Here I might add that the Crusaders primarily sought to regain these territories when the Crusades began in the late 11th century, in 1095. And it took Hungary, for example, 200 years to recover from the devastation and the ravages that the Muslims had caused on their land. So the object is to conquer the world. In fact, you see parade signs in many instances, for example, will say, your world today, our world tomorrow. And that is still an objective for Islam, even though the author seems to indicate or likes to indicate and wants people to believe that Islam is a religion of peace, as we heard a great deal after 9/11, that Islam is a religion of peace. Contrary to reality of history, and you have to ignore history to buy that false propaganda statement.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of several books, including The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. When you purchase this book using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesctc.org, click Talk on Demand Archives, and look for The Great Divide by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll continue our Lutheran Confessions series, talking with Pastor Paul McCain about election in the Solid Declaration of the Formula of Concord. On Wednesday, we'll get a biography of Mary Magdalene from Dr. Chris Mitchell. And on Thursday, we'll discuss the United Nations and anti-family policies with Kimberly Ells. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow, across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.